organizers for the invitation to give a talk here. Dear Jerry, no stories, but I just would like to thank you very much for being, from the very beginning, such a patient, thorough, and careful teacher, and to become a very precious friend, an evaluation which is also shared by my wife. I mean, she is always as happy and glad to hear that you are coming to Europe as I am, and you have always been very much welcome, not only for mathematics, but also as a personal friend. Okay, so let's start with a simple algebraic group, simple V algebra over a complex number. So there are many ways, different ways of making out of this infinite dimensional V algebra. So let CG, let this be the tensor product with a ring of polynomials in one variable. This is the current algebra. LG, this is just the extension with a ring of Laurent polynomials. Loop algebra. And we also have the affine Katz-Moody algebra. Which is a vector space, can be written as LG, then we have the central extension, and then we have the derivation. So note that despite the way I'm writing this, this is not a subalgebra of this, but the current algebra, this is really a subalgebra of the affine Katz-Moody algebra. In fact, if you add the C and the D, then this is a honest parabolic subalgebra of the affine Katz-Moody algebra. So what I'm interested is in understanding the finite dimensional representations of these objects. So let's start with an example. So let's see the any complex number. And we have the evaluation map, let's say, from the current algebra to G, which takes an element G, tensor F just to F of C times G. So by pulling back, we can make any finite dimensional representation of this G into a finite dimensional representation over this object. So these are the evaluation representations. By pulling back representations of my finite dimensional V algebra. Another example of how to construct finite dimensional representations for the current algebra is by using the fact that I can see them more or less as a parabolic subalgebra. So this is using de Maizière modules. So let 0, lambda 0, let this be the fundamental weight. Which corresponds to the extra note for the affine Katz-Moody algebra. So we know then that the de Maizière submodules and the irreducible representation, which is infinite dimensional of G hat, that correspond to elements in the affine Weyl group. And the following way, so if I take an element here, then I do the following. I take a highest weight vector in here. I apply to this the element from the affine Weyl group, and then I take the enveloping algebra of the Borel subalgebra of G hat, so B hat and G hat Borel, and apply this and take the subspace which is generated in this way. There's always finite dimension, and of course we see when I take here an element, then I can look at this modulo, the stabilizer, which is the usual classical Weyl group. Well, and the quotient is nothing else than the co-root system. So we have here a bijection between these the Mozilla submodules and these co-root systems. So by the very definition, these submodules, they are only stable under this B hat. But it's then easy to see that when I take lambda and I check anti-dominant, this is equivalent to say, so let's give this guy a name. So let's just call this D of MW. This is equivalent to say D of M lambda is stable under the current algebra. So when you start with an anti-dominant weight, then take the de Moisier module, then this one is automatically not only stable under this one, but is also stable, not only stable under the Borel, but actually under the current algebra. And actually here I've chosen this an element in R hat, well, with a little usual extension, you can go to any dominant or anti-dominant weight in the co-root and the co-lattice, because what you get then as a semi-direct product of this lattice with a Weyl group is the so-called extended affine Weyl group. And one knows that every element there can be written as a product of an element of the affine Weyl group times an automorphism, which fixes the fundamental alcove. So in the general case, this element, this will then not be a de Moisier submodule in here, but in the irreducible module you get by moving the lambda zero around with your automorphism. But in this way, we get a nice set of finite dimensional representations. So usually you start with examples, and then you start to produce out of the examples you know new examples. So representations here, usually you take the tensor product. But here a nice thing which has been introduced by Fagan and Loctus is the so-called fusion product. So let's suppose we have M1 up to M, let's say T, some graded finite dimensional cyclic CG modules. Now keep in mind that CFG, the current algebra, has a natural grading. And let's say the generators are M1 up to MT. So when we then look at the M1 tensor product, MT, and this is in general not any more cyclic. But there is a way to make this, again, cyclic. So what you use is the following map, CG to CG, which takes an element C, x tensor t to the power s, to x tensor, say, t minus a to the power s. So let's call this CA, where a is an element in the complex numbers. So this is an automorphism of this algebra, which comes from ring automorphism. And so when we have a module, then let MA, let this be just a pull back of the module, so you just change a little bit the way it acts. So let's put here M1 up to MA, up to AT. Then this is again cyclic if all the AI are different from AJ or I different from J. Okay, so what is now the fusion product? This one is not only cyclic, but it is also generated by the element you would like to have, namely just the tensor product of the generators you started with. And, well, since the algebra we started with is graded, so I know that we didn't have this has a natural filtration. Finite dimensional cyclic graded modules.
But then why can't it be M1 to M2 to M1 to M1? These are again finite dimensional.
Yes.
They're not graded anymore?
No. No. You want to have again, of course, something which is cyclic, finite dimensional, and graded. No, so the idea is somehow you have something which is cyclic and graded, and you want to have something back which is cyclic and graded, and the idea is somehow to change the action such a way that you get something cyclic, and then you induce and impose a grading. So this one has a filtration which comes from the grading. Of the algebra. So this depends, of course, then also of the choice, for example, of the generators. And, well, then the fusion product is then nothing else than the associated graded. Which is then again cyclic and graded. Conjecture. So the conjecture is that this construction is independent of A1 up to AT. And it's conjectured also that this is associative and commutative. So from the definition, nothing is obvious. Okay, that's so far. Nobody has found a counterexample in some cases, to which I will come back later. It's known that this is true, but in general, nothing is known so far. So this construction goes back to Octave, Sagan. And locked it. Okay, so another class of examples of interesting finite dimensional representations are the so-called Weyl modules. So, while these can be defined in a more general setting, so let A be, let's say, a finitely generated C algebra with a unit, and let's fix a map from A to C. So then a Weyl module, and let's fix lambda, a dominant weight. Yeah. So then definition. Weyl module, the Weyl module of G tensor A of highest weight lambda is the maximal finite dimensional cyclic G tensor A module generated by an element such that, okay, so what do I need? B tensor F applied to V is equal to epsilon of F lambda of B times Z. So where, and this should hold for all F and A and for all B and B, which is the Borel of G. So here I use the usual extension of lambda as a weight on the maximal torus by extending it trivially to the Borel. Sorry?
Yeah.
No. No, because I am only having the highest weight vector. So it's only acting on the highest weight vector with the epolarization. Okay? So from the definition, No. A is a commutative C algebra. Yes. But you just take the highest weight vector. So you want for, I mean, somehow it's the usual procedure. You take the Borel now with an extended thing. Then you take their one-dimensional representation. Then you induce it up. Then you get something very big. And then you ask your question, is there a finite dimensional quotient? And if there is one, is there a maximum one? And if there is, you call this bimodule. They are then quotients, of course, of this. Okay, so this definition, this goes back, so this was by Shari and Presley. So they did it for a polynomial ring and the Laurent polynomials. And this formulation is due to Loctus and Fagin and Loctus. Okay, so to give you some feeling what is known in this general setting, let's take a case example. T1 up to say TD, so which looks somehow like the simplest case. And among the linear algebras, the simplest case is G is equal to SL2. So in this case, this is the natural number. So let's make a list. Okay, so here I list D, and here I list the dimension of this Weyl module for N, and I take epsilon. This is just the map from A to C, sending F to F of 0. Okay, so when D is equal to 0, then our algebra is just the usual SL2. So we know what the dimension of these modules is. This is N plus 1. Okay, so let's suppose D is equal to 1. Then dimension is 2 to the power N. So this goes back to Shari and Presley. That's just because you have this extension of scalars. When you start with a highest weight vector, when you go down, you have much more space than you have in the classical case, and this is why these representations get so big. Oh, no, this is D is equal to 1, so I have one variable. So this is the classical, this is the one variable. Now let's go to 2. Okay, so this is then 2n plus 1. Factorial over n plus 1 factorial and n plus 2 factorial. So you may recognize that these are the Catalan numbers. So this was done by Fagin and Loctus. So for 3, nothing is known. There is a conjecture. namely that the dimension of the weight spaces is the so-called Hoggett sequence. Well, if you want to see what this Hoggett sequence is, of each weight, yes, I will write down what this Hoggett sequence is. There wasn't enough space. Namely, that the dimension of the weight space, n minus 2i, this is supposed to be d plus n minus 1 factorial d plus n minus I factorial times 2 factorial, now it's going up again, e minus 1 factorial, divided by n minus 1 factorial, going down up to n minus I factorial, d factorial, now going up to d plus I minus 1 factorial. Huh? Ah, okay, so this is greater or equal to 3. So this is the d. So that's the only case where something people at least have a conjecture what the right dimension of the weight spaces should be. So for G different from SL2, the only thing which is known is for SLR and D equal to 3, then the dimension of W now of n times omega 1, so only for this representation, multiple of the first fundamental weight, this is equal to the higher Catalan numbers. This is only for d equal to 3. For d equal to 2 and 1 is also known. Into irreducibles. I will come to back to this later. Okay. Now for SL2, in this case, this is what the number suggests, namely this is as SL2 representation, this is just the tensor product of the C2 n times with itself. Okay, so now there is another class of representations, which are called the Kirilov-Reshetykin modules. Okay, this is again definition. So they are associated, okay, R to n times omega I. Omega I, a fundamental weight for G. Okay, so, well, definition, this is cyclic G tensor CT, so this is only a CG module, so we are now back to the current algebra, generated by V such that, by one element, okay, now defining relations, N tensor C of T, times V is 0, so again, this is my, as before, highest weight module. H tensor TCT times V is 0, so this fits so far in this definition over there, where you take epsilon to be just the evaluation at 0. So this is again the highest weight module. H times V is equal to M omega I of H times V. So this is also still in the context above. So now comes slowly the difference. X alpha I minus M plus 1 times V is 0. X alpha J minus times V is 0 for all J different from I. And what is here? X alpha I tensor T times V is equal to 0. So those who know the algebras may guess what the notation means. So these are the generators corresponding to the simple roots. And these are the ones which are weight minus alpha I. And here, of course, there's also a minus, the same here and the same here. So what's the difference between these two things? If you want to have something finite dimensional, then you know, of course, that these relations have to hold for your Lie algebra G, because otherwise for your Lie algebra G, this wouldn't get to a finite dimensional. So the only difference is somehow in this point. So let me now explain to you in a few words where this comes from and why I'm you bothering with all these definitions. So the origin of all this is Grünfeld, yeah? This is the same M as here. So this is the, Yeah, that should always be the same. Yeah, N equal to M. Okay, the interest in the subject goes back to Grünfeld, who more or less showed when we look at the quantized version, so I don't want to bother you with all the definition of the quantized version, but there is a quantized version of this loop algebra. And he noticed that when you look at these irreducible representations, finite dimensional, that these are interesting in physics because they provide solutions for the Young-Baxter equations. Namely, when you look at the tensor product of two of these irreducible modules, then there are a few mild conditions, then this tensor product again is irreducible. So when you then look at the flip and write down the matrix, then this matrix solves the is the solution to the usual Young-Baxter equations. And the fact that you would like to have the loop module is the reason is that you get what are called, I think, the dynamical solutions of the Young-Baxter equation. That means you get a matrix together with a parameter, and this is what the physicists are very much interested in. So people thought, of course, that this is a good reason to look and classify these irreducible representations, which was done by Shari and Presley. And the problem is that there is no good link between the classification and the data you want to have. So this classification is given by some list of polynomials, the so-called Grünfeld polynomials. But for example, nobody knows so far, if I give you this list, what is the dimension of the representation, or the character, or whatever. So there is no good, you really have here a big problem if you want to tell physicists what you're doing is physics, because whenever he asks you to calculate one, you don't even know how big the matrices are. So they developed a kind of philosophy trying to solve this problem. So I think the idea they had somehow back in mind was inspired by what's going on in characteristic P. Well, we have the usual representations which we know very well in characteristic zero. So they also exist as modules in characteristic P, but of course they are not irreducible. But what you are trying to do is to understand the characters of the irreducible ones with the help of the so-called Weyl modules. So that was the reason why they introduced this notion of Weyl modules. So which are then, by definition, maximal finite dimensional highest weight module. So the hope was
maximal one.
Well, maximal with respect to these irreducible highest weight modules, and these are these maximal. That means every other highest weight module corresponding to this given weight is a quotient of these. So in that sense, maximal. Okay, so my hope was that these are maybe easier to understand. And once you understand them well, then to go back to the irreducible ones. So it turned out that the plan they had was more or less somehow the following. They have a classification of these Meyer modules. And of course, then they wanted to understand what's, for example, the dimension, what's the decomposition with respect to the finite dimensional subalgebra, understand the character, understand the grading. So what is the classification? The classification of these Weyl modules is by a list of polynomials with a constant coefficient 1. So when I write down here list, say R, where R is the rank of G. So these are these Weyl modules for the quantized loop algebra. So what was already known is that the dimension of this guy is greater or equal to the product of the dimension of so-called fundamental modules. So this is, they play in some sense the same role as the fundamental representations in the classical theory. Well, and then they showed that up to some twist by some automorphism, these guys have a lattice
module is contained
in here. Well, it's this one can show, yes, because of the cyclic space, you know that when you twist things in the right thing, this will become, again, some cyclic module. And then you know that this one has to be a quotient of this one. This is the reason why this is greater or equal. So then you can go here to Q equal to 1. So here you get then an LG module, which is then well, there we have also defined what a Weyl module is, and then one can easily check that by the universality condition, that when you take here the specialization, so I should have written that this list of polynomials, constant coefficient 1, and field is, of course, this. And while the condition that you look at, that you have a lattice, means then that you can here also specify in this polynomial Q equal to 1. And so we have here a corresponding Weyl module, and then one knows that this one is surjective, because one can show that this is, again, a cyclic module of the right way. And then, of course, you can look at this thing not only for the loop algebra, but just for the current algebra. And then you'll see again that this is a cyclic module, which is of highest weight, lambda, which is the sum, the degree of the pi times omega I. And then you have here And then again, by universality, you have that this map is surjective. So this is the PG module. Okay, so to prove that, for example, you have this nice dimension formula, you just have to prove that the dimension of this guy is equal to this product, and then you get everywhere equality. So that was the plan they had in mind. Works correctly. My workers, I think yesterday it didn't work. Okay, so now there was Kashiwara. And Nakajima. So if you put, I think, 5 or 6 articles of Kashiwara and Nakajima together, then you see, actually what I wrote down is a very nice construction because everything is a free module over some algebra, namely Kashiwara constructs some kind of extremely weight representations which are infinite dimensional, and then you can, this is a work of Nakajima and Beck, you can get these as nice quotients, and from that you can deduce that the up to this point the dimension formula holds here above, and hence you know that this is a nice vibration, this is flat, and then you get everything. So, but I would like to present a different approach, which is more in the spirit of what Shari and Presley had in mind. Of course, it doesn't work as general as Kashiwara and Nakajima's method, but it gives also the connection between these modules and these de Maizière modules. And this was actually what I was originally after together with my student. I mean, to understand that we looked at some tables, looked at some decompositions, and these decompositions looked equal, and then we tried to understand why they looked at the same. Okay. So a last remark is on these KR modules, these gorilla friction taking modules. They also come from physics. And it was Kirillov and Reshetykin who predicted the existence of certain certain finite dimensional modules for the quantum loop algebra. And they predicted that they were irreducible, that they had a canonical basis, that they had a crystal. And they also conjectured a character formula for these, but this character formula was not explicit in the sense that you would write a closed formula, but it was rather a list of functional equations they would satisfy. And this definition, which I have written down, is due to Shari. And but this is, of course, for the classical one. What she proved is that these representations for the quantum loop algebra, they have a lattice, and when you then specialize at Q equal to 1, then you get for the current algebra exactly a representation which satisfies these equations. Okay. So what's now the connection between all these modules? So this is with a student of mine, Gislain Fourier. So what we showed is the following. Well, since we have a nice simple algebra, we have an isomorphism between the real part of the maximal torus and its dual, so where do I have to put the dual to get this? And we fix it in such a way, normalize it, so that this be the highest co-root. So do I want to have a hat here? Yeah. So I want to have that. This is fixed in such a way. So then, I look at the de Maizière module corresponding to M and the fundamental coweight, and this is nothing else than the Kirilov-Resheptykin module for M times d I omega I, where of course we have that mu of omega I check is equal to di omega I, and then di is equal to 1, 2, or 3, depending on the root system. So these Kirilov-Resheptykin modules, they show up as in a natural, very natural way as de Maizière modules, so you get a nice other different geometric description of these modules. So in particular, when we look at the case ADE, then of course the DI is equal to 1, then we have all KR modules, de Maizière modules. So these questions of getting then graded character formulas or getting decompositions are then the same as for the de Maizière modules. So we get the same stuff. So the connection with the Weyl modules and the case of ADE. Then we have d n of lambda check. So in this case, ADE, lambda check, and lambda can be identified because we can always identify the root system and the co-root system. And this is, I have to write here 1. This is W of lambda. So in this case, you get these Weyl modules for ACT. Keep in mind the general definitions, and that's the case I'm looking at for the current algebra. So in this case, all these de Maizière modules are exactly of the, you get for the level 1 representation, they are exactly these Weyl modules, which I have defined. The fusion product also comes into the picture. So let lambda check the dominant coweight, and let's suppose we have a decomposition into smaller coweights, which are also dominant. So let's write it down like this. Then we can look on the one hand at the de Maizière module of this guy. We can also look at the de Maizière modules and the fusion products of all these de Maizière modules. And then they are isomorphic as modules for the current algebra. Which in particular plus. Now this is independent. This is, of course, the proof that this is independent, because you get always this module. So in this case, you know, it's everything you want. It's independent of the parameters. It's associative. It's commutative, because you can choose whatever decomposition you want here. And of course, you know that this fusion product for your finite dimensional algebra G is just the usual tensor product. No, this is general. So this is only here ADE. So this works in general. So since the fusion product is always just the usual tensor product when you restrict it for to the finite dimensional algebra. Then you see, of course, that when you want to decompose this with respect to G, you do this for the fundamental weights, for the smallest De Moseau module you can get. And then you have this guy is the big tensor product. Okay, and then for the fundamentals, you look in our paper where you'll find this decomposition in all classical cases and for the exceptional ones in the obvious cases. And it, of course, it doesn't work so nicely and smoothly in the other cases because just these computations become at the moment still too big. You have to use a computer. So here you get this decomposition, but of course this can then be used also to look, for example, at limit construction. Okay, so this, what I write down now works actually in a somewhat more general setting, but just to say notation. So we have theta as the highest root, and well, one can prove that inside here, let this be a vector fixed by current algebra. This always exists. You can show this. And then let Vm infinity, let this be the limit for n going to infinity. And what you do is you take the fusion product. So we have here this n is then the number of components you write down for the fusion product. And the embedding is always given by you take a vector here and map it to omega tensor V. And this you continue. Then as module for the current algebra, there's Vn infinity is isomorphic to the irreducible representation of the Kac-Moody algebra when you go down to the current algebra. So this is a special case of some formulas which you maybe know. I said, well, in general, one can also take the other De Moseau modules, for example, the standard defining representation of SLN. You also find it as a De Moseau module. And then if you forget about the current algebra and only look at the finite dimensional algebra, then you see the usual formula that when I take Cn tensor with itself S, S going to infinity, if you look at the character of this, now this is the same as the character of the Kac-Moody algebra, but when you then restrict this to the torus of the classical finite dimensional SLR fitting in SLN hat. So in this sense, this is a kind of generalization of these kind of formulas. Question? Okay, so one of these consequences is then, for example, since we have here this decomposition and these are the viral modules, so you see immediately that in the case ADE, you get a nice dimension formula for these modules, and then you have to check this a little bit to get then that you have equality of the dimensions over there. So you get as a consequence, for example, a different proof of the fact that everywhere here where you, I wrote a subjection that these, you have equality. While the other consequence I mentioned already, namely that the fusion product for these classes of representations is then obviously independent. Now another nice question where I don't understand very well what is going on is the following. Well, when you take the direct sum of these de Maizière modules, and then we take the proch of this, then this is a Schubert variety. And as I said, so in these proofs, what we use very often, that we know what these guys are, that we have de Maizière character formulas, de Maizière operators, and things like that. So we have a nice geometric interpretation for these objects. So now the question is whether one can find a similar kind of geometric realization also for the Weyl modules in the case where the Weyl modules and the de Maizière modules are not the same. So in the non-ADE case, they are really different. They are bigger. So what one can do is the following. So this goes again back to Loftus and Fagan. What they looked at is they defined higher level Weyl modules. So the definition is very simple if you understand what a Weyl module is. Namely, it's just that V of lambda k, this is just you take the tensor product and inside there you take the submodule generated by W tensor W, where W is a generator. So one can again take then the direct sum, k going greater or equal to 0. So in the case where the Weyl module and the de Maizière module are the same, this is the same thing which I have written down over there. And while the question is, what is the proch of this? So one knows that this, again, is a projective variety, and you can get this direct sum, again, as global sections of some line bundle, so in the same way you do the construction of the de Maizière modules, or respectively the dual de Maizière modules. Yeah, you have to jump back and forth. Okay, yes, you're right. You have to take the duals of these. Yes, to get an algebra. Okay, so one knows, again, that this is the ring of global sections for some line bundle, but what the structure is of these objects, I have at the moment no idea whether they are, I don't know, singular, whether they are normal, whether they have rational singularities, and so on. No idea. I only know that they are definitely bigger than the corresponding Schubert varieties. So just the dimensions already. Yes. No, I don't at the moment don't know anything. Good to have enough students so that you can make them calculate them. I have no dimension formula yet. Only in these examples which I started to calculate, you see immediately that they are bigger. Yes. No, it's much bigger. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the only thing you have here. Okay. Thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you.
confusion.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, speaker again.